Good evening, everyone. It's Wednesday night. It's just after 7 o'clock, and we are working our way through the American Book of the Dead guidebook by E.J. Gold. And it's a book that was written in the 70s, and it captured a whole other side of the guidebook, of the transit work. And when we talked to EJ about it, he said that he was asked, or he was suggested to him by Rashad, that he experiment with the 99 names. And so in the center section of this guidebook, there are several chapters on depicting those names of the Absolute. And interesting, each one has an attribute. And what was that attribute's name again, Dan?
Ophatah is this book, and Dan got us the information.
Well, according to this, Ophatah is the opener of the doors of mercy on his servant.
Okay, good. That goes along with the way that we were introduced. And so these sets of books that EJ has presented to us in the guidebook have basically two parts to it. The first part introduces the attribute of God, and then he goes back into the Voyager space after that. And I wanted to share a personal experience that I had, Ivan, if that's okay, before we get into this. I've been enormously busy lately with my practice, and also with enormously busy with my practice and many things that are going on right now. So, you know, I'm enmeshed in a sense in that busyness.
Mm-hmm.
And then I picked up this book and I started reading it. And it was like I had suddenly come upon an oasis of change. And the transition from that world into this world was stunning for me.
Oh, yeah.
And it's as if we have an opportunity to do that all the time. And then when I started reading the detail of it, then it became apparent to me, something very interesting became apparent to me. So what I'd like to do is just read the first three verses, Ivan, and then we'll penetrate that a bit, and then we'll flip into the Voyager space, and we might need a little bit of help on that, okay? So let's go ahead. Do you want to go ahead and read all three of them then?
Yeah, sure, I can do that.
Go ahead.
The 14th Book of the Dead, called the Book of Ophatah. 1. I am the one by whose intervention everything is opened that was closed, and everything that was obscure is made manifest through my action. 2. I can lift the veil from the hearts of the friends of the Lord. And I can open the gates of the kingdom for those who are able to gaze upon his beautiful countenance without fear. 3. It is my hands which hold the keys to the invisible world, and it is my hands which hold the key to sustenance for the spiritual consciousness.
So we have a fascinating situation here. So let's go through it real carefully again. And I'm going to do it in a certain way that some of us will understand and have experienced. So he is saying that I am the one, then he says, by whose intervention everything is opened that was closed. Okay? So that's one concept. And everything that would obscure is made manifest through my action. I can, then he says, I can, and think of this as a space, lift the veil from the hearts of the friends of the Lord. I can lift the veil from them.
Mm-hmm.
And I open the gates of the kingdom for those who are able to gaze upon his beatific countenance, his beautiful countenance, without fear. And it is in my hands which hold the keys to the invisible world. And it is my hands which hold the key to sustenance for spiritual consciousness. So I was reading that and I thought, what is that? Sounds really good, right? I mean, it sounds really good, and then there was like, I had this sentiment that went on in me that I went, oh, yeah, I want that, right? There was a kind of a yearning feeling for it. But then I began thinking, what is it? What is that attribute that occurs right then? So what is it that we do in such that we actually invoke the spirit of Ul-Fatah? What happens? And then the lifting of the veil occurs. Do we ever see this in our life? Where there's a fairly marked division between being veiled and being unveiled.
Well, David,
yes.
If I might just interject here, one idea is, I know that when I got back in contact with here with the Institute, I had just gone through having cancer, and I tell you, in my feeling is that this was experienced, except that not to the full, obviously, the full extent, but it was enough of a shock spiritually that I made my way back here to, you know, the ABD and the, I never really left it in my heart, but
correct,
because of a shock, you know, to emotional, physical, mental. And I think that might be the key right there. One of the keys, anyway, is having a shock, basically. And it affecting all those elements, emotional, physical, mental. Mm-hmm.
Right.
And that shock could lead to a change of awareness, to awake, sort of a more of a waking state or a concentrated state. What I was thinking.
Yes. Yes. I mean, I...
more what?
I was just going to say, and that shock was that, you know, I could have died. So, you know, being faced with death, that can be somewhat of a shock too, and it wasn't fear in any way, I have to say, but more of... It was more of gratitude, and it's appreciation. It's really a hard way to put that into words. But the shock of not the fear of death, but the gratitude is what brought me back, I think.
Appreciation of life.
Yeah, the appreciation. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm thinking that it's the, you know, going from the distractions, if you're immersed in superficiality, basically, in like in the distractions, your everyday life, your schedule, your obligations, your
which I was
work and tasks and so on, the something that draws you into the present moment, then will actually give you a shock. I mean, to me, I've experienced that as a shock, which is just coming back into one-pointedness or concentration, and then it's like a it is like a breath of fresh air. It's like a different, suddenly you're in a different atmosphere.
So, Laura 34, I'd like you to listen to the first paragraph of chapter 24 of Practical Work on Self. Dan, please.
How would you like to discover just how precious life really is, but only in your last moment, just as the machine is taking its last few breaths? What would you learn about life? What would you appreciate suddenly that you had never really appreciated, maybe never even noticed before this moment?
What's the name of the chapter?
The chapter is Last Hour of Life.
Chapter 24, Practical Work on Self by E.J. Gold. So you can see how everything's wound together, woven together for us, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when you're in that moment, and it's like life is giving you the opportunity to look more brilliantly at the life around you, and you observe and you just appreciate the loveliness of a hard wind, or, you know, the feel of a couple of drops of rain on your face as a sensation rather than as a bother. You just sense it as something about you, and you begin to appreciate the sense of the next breath and how precious it is that you can breathe one more time. Is that how you felt, Kay?
Quite a bit of what you're saying is what I felt, and I was in a situation where I had help for a couple of weeks after the operation, but then I didn't have really a lot of help. So I had to do my own laundry, cook my own meals, all this kind of stuff. And what I'm trying to explain is that, you know, how we're supposed to, one of the exercises is to put your attention on your movements and your, each piece of laundry was like a struggle to get into the, into the washing machine. But it also slowed me down so much that I was more present. Everything I did, I appreciated, you know, doing the dishes, having to do, you know, cook my own meal and do my own shopping and all that. So it's like I was doing exercises. They were being presented to me in a way, you know, by having to go ahead.
So let's read these verses, a couple of these verses again in light of what you're saying.
I just want to say one other thing real quick.
Sure.
Is the appreciation for others. Is a big one, the appreciation for others. Okay.
Excellent. And then the 14th book of the dead, called the Book of Ulfata, starts and says what?
I am the one by whose intervention everything is opened that was closed. And everything that was obscure is made manifest through my action.
So is it possible that the intervention that you felt was from that attribute of God?
Oh, yes, I could say so, definitely. Oh,
yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Like, I am he who lifts the veil. And the veil was lifted from your eyes. And you began to see. Nothing was different in your world, but you were fundamentally different, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It was, like coming through, even with the operation. I'm getting very personal here. I don't really mean to, but I think it might be helpful for people. When I went into, and I've mentioned it before, when I went into the operation, I used all phenomena as illusion, actually as I was going under. And the thing of it is that at some point, and I have never figured it out when, it could be when I was coming out of, it doesn't really matter, I remember seeing people or beings. I couldn't quite see them, but you know, they were, it was dark. I'll say that it was very dark, but I knew that it was very spiritual, I guess, is wherever that space was very spiritual. And, you know, it was either when I was under or when I was coming out of it, or I don't know where, but it was it's almost as if that helped to set in motion, you know, what Al-Fatah is speaking of here. But the veil might have been lifted a little bit is what happened. Definitely it wasn't fully lifted, but, you know, it was to an extent to get me back on the path, I guess. Not that I ever left it. I want that clear.
Well, yeah, in a theoretical way, you left it. However, as your eyes were opened slightly more and our veil is lifted, then we seek a place for that to be expressed. And that certainly happened to me 30 years ago, and Ivan 40, and several people, they suddenly, where can I go to find what I'm going to call home? And many of us wound up here at this school. That
yeah.
is the sense of home. Because then I can express what gets expressed when the veil is lifted. So how do we invoke Ul-Fatah? How do we invoke him on a daily basis? What do we call that in our particular work, in our school?
The invocation of presence?
The invocation of presence. You awaken the machine and the veil is lifted. You're in a different world at that moment. You invoke the presence of your essential self and you allow that to manifest. The machine is quiet and you are in the awakened state. You are in the world called I lift the veil. And then in the third verse, at the end of it, what does it say?
And it is my hands which hold the key to sustenance for the spiritual consciousness.
How do you like putting that together with HBM? And you wonder, what is the transformational effect of the human biological machine? Mm-hmm. That is what it is. The veil is open, and we can peer right into the world that we need to feed our soul, and it is the sustenance. When I'm in that world, mm-hmm. I am being given the food of my soul. And you know, we had a big debate as to what's the difference between soul and essential self and all of that. And there were some interesting thoughts that came of it. But I knew that in order to be fed, I had to be here. It changed my entire life, as a lot of the people here have done.
Yeah, that's beautiful, David. That's true.
Yeah, and didn't we want a place to be with people where we can more easily awaken or lift the veil, right? We want to see directly, not through a glass darkly.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
If we have that if we share that aim with our colleagues, with the Sangha, then we have
more
energy. We have more.
So good.
What would you call it? We have more of an engine. We have more power for the work, for doing the work. I was thinking of also of in everyday life. I was thinking of signposts of that which. Regarding manifestation, what does it say here? Everything that was obscure is made manifest through my action. I don't know, it was just occurring to me that sometimes I have those, you know, I get stopped by, obviously if I pick up this book, then this is a artifact of this school and of my teacher, of E.J. Gold, and of, let's say, of an ancient teaching, you know, of a school that has, let's say, some claim on existence outside of whatever this historical moment is, perhaps. But, you know, I was, for some reason, I thought of hearing the frogs. You know, when it rains here, where we live in the foothills, in this season, we've been having a lot of drought for years now. But when it rains, where I live, we have what's called a vernal pond. So there's a pond that fills up, and then only if there's enough rain, the frogs hatch out. And you have these frogs all over the foothills, and you hear this frog chorus at night.
Wow.
You know, you go so, for instance, like I'll drive home, it's raining now. When I go home and park my car, I'm probably going to hear these frogs going at it, you know, because it's after dark. And there's somehow something about that is partly because there's a sound, there's a recording of a frog chorus very similar to that that EJ used in one of his guided meditations, you know, in the How I Raised Myself from the Dead, in, what is it, in 99, in 49 days or less,
yeah,
and you can too, and, you know, I think that he's used that recording more than once, but I realize that there are certain moments when I hear that frog chorus when I go from listening, from sort of being in the state of mind, oh, there are the frogs, isn't that nice, and then I go into, like, okay, I'm aware of this sound that the frogs are making, and then I'm aware that I'm aware of it. You know, I'm actually looking at, that's the invocation of presence in the sense that I think about, I have some sense of not just what I'm paying attention to, but of the source of attention, as what EJ, the way that he formulates it in the invocation of presence in that book. So I'm having a moment where I'm realizing that I'm responding, that I'm hearing and absorbing this impression from the frogs. So I'm observing my own state as well as the frogs' state, or whatever.
Right.
Of course.
And so at that moment, the veil is lifted, and that is the mechanism. The mechanism that is called ulfatah.
Yeah, something like that.
It is available. That's what it's saying here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the one that opens the veil.
Yeah, I think that, does it actually say that? It certainly suggests that there is always a manifestation of the truth that you could be experiencing.
That's, there
if
it is.
If the gate is open, or what is it, does he say? Well, he says everything is open that was closed, but it's like saying, the veil from the thing, I can lift the veil from the hearts of the friends of the Lord, and the gate, I can open the gates of the kingdom. But this is, you know, it's sort of, there is always, those gates are not very far away. In other words,
they're
always nearby.
And the other one that I underlined for myself is the last phrase in that second verse, for those who are able to gaze upon his beautiful countenance without fear.
Mm-hmm.
And I just have to share, I've had that experience. And I think that we have to open our eyes and lose the ordinariness that we put on our fellows, our surroundings here.
Mm-hmm.
I am not surrounded by ordinary individuals right now. I am surrounded by angelic beings, and that's the case of it. And what happens is that I sometimes fear the beauty of the countenance of the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
The aura. The manifestation, the presence of it. There's this beautiful, shimmering aura. And there are times when I need to run from it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm afraid of it. And why am I afraid? Because then I want to keep the veil on rather than see that piercing beauty that is the friends around me. Very hard.
So is that painful, David? Is that a painful thing for you?
It is. And when I bear the pain, then I can move through it to the acceptance of being in the space of the angelic choir that is around me.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if I'm getting what David's saying exactly, but I would think it's painful to the ego, right? It's painful to the smaller self.
Oh, yeah.
To be faced with unlimitedness, with the voidness of the void, or the radiance of the countenance, or whatever it is. But then there's also, you know what Rumi, we've read from Rumi here, what Rumi is all full of for hundreds and hundreds of poems and verses and the Mathnavi and all that is that there's a pain of separation. You know, it may be when you look upon the countenance, when you see something, but you're not at the point of merging with it. You're not one with it. So there may be the pain that what you realize then is, I'm still separated from that.
Well, that was, I'm sorry, Kay, do you want to go ahead?
Oh, no, Ivan just said it, the last words, the pain of separation or you're being revealed. And which would, you know, be the ego stepping in. I don't know.
But, no. It is that. And just to emphasize what Ivan was saying is that in addition to that fear that is manifesting me at those times, I have a feeling of loneliness.
Mm.
I feel lonely. And that I hadn't seen before, Ivan, but I feel separated. You're right.
I think that's different. I'm saying that I think those two pains are different because there's a pain that's there's the human biological machine pain, which is going to be inevitable, right? Because if you're, like EJ says, it would be pathological to be always in the waking state. So you're going to be going in and out of the waking state.
Right.
So this whole practice regarding the chronic defense mechanism and all that, there's inevitably going to be resistance, more or less, or you may, you know, handle it in different ways, or you may come to recognize it more readily or whatever. But that's, the machine is going to have a pain about going into the waking state. But then I'm thinking, like, you know, there's a pain that you're going to have. I think there's a pain that I have. I'm trying to think of what it is. It's like more like a nostalgia or a sentimentality or something like that.
Right.
Going back into the waking state, there's an emotion, which is, well, I don't know, maybe somebody could help me out. What is that emotion when you know that you can't stay in the waking state? You know, you can't stay in gazing on the countenance or in, let's say, if you've had an experience of something closer to unity than you're used to, and then you're going back to the normal, and what is that emotion like? Boy, I could stay there forever. Or, I mean, I wish I were there again or something, you know.
David. David. And
yes.
Maybe it's the loneliness is the separation.
That's,
in other words, real. Go ahead.
You know, you say that, and I can't bear it sometimes when I think about what you're saying. It's so hard for me to bear because here's the illusion that, and I've been studying this for the last 3 weeks, okay? This has been haunting me, and now we come upon this chapter. But it's, I believe that if I am accepted more into the group, then that will go away.
Hmm.
You understand what I'm saying?
I do absolutely. I feel you. I feel it.
Because if I feel I'm accepted into the group, that's proof that I've reached it. But it isn't. It's this thing that Ivan's talking about, this longing, this yearning to really be back home. And one thing I can say is that when I'm with my friends here and you and things like that, I feel a sense of completion. I feel at home right now, for instance.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I may not feel that in 3 hours as the day winds down and I start to feel that loneliness. But it's that, you're right, it's that strange yearning to be in that state.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's also, but yeah, I hear what I hear David saying. I mean, this is like sometimes I have some other obligation, or for some reason, let's say I can't get here on the Wednesday evening. But you know, I feel a remorse. I feel remorse about that because this is like a homing instinct. Like I'm very drawn to be here for this hour on a Wednesday night. I mean, this is very. It's very hard to. Or go to, you know, to pass up on this opportunity, you know, to be.
Would you call it a yearning?
For me, it is a yearning.
Yeah, that I think we all have that. I have it too, you know.
Here's another part of it that I wanted to explore a little bit, is that sometimes when I see my fellow workers working. I'm not going to mention any names, but there's 3 or 4 individuals, men and women, who I think are excellent of spirit. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
when I feel shame, embarrassment, I feel something like that.
I know what you're talking about there. It's like when you said, guess what? When you have developed enough discernment, you know, when you can actually see when somebody is, let's say,
they're like
working with an energy flow, with a higher energy flow, with it, you know, they're working with high concentration and high attention, then, you know, I mean, that can make me feel like, boy, where am I? Look at that. Look at where I am compared to that energy, to that attention.
That's my point. And
concentration.
And that in itself starts to separate me.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I can't think where it's spoken of, but somewhere in the mountainous volumes of books, it is mentioned. And if I come across it or find it out, I'll send it to you.
I appreciate that.
We're lacking our scholar Silverdale here today.
Yes, yes.
But I'll tell you something.
Verse, give us the verse and chapter
and verse.
Yeah.
But for some reason, a particular element, as mentioned in that the last part of that third verse, has been so powerful for me the last few weeks, even to the extent of feeling devastated. I've had some really tough times.
Well, I think, you know, good grief, I think I go through that every day. And
yeah.
Now, I'm not just saying it, you know, to diminish what I mean, is that I think that through that, my hope is that spiritual growth occurs, you know, that, but I can relate. I relate, Dave.
Well, you know, something that hit me the other day was that, because I started to feel a particular form of despair, and, you know, I'm not trying to be overly dramatic, because I don't have that. That's my...
Mm-hmm.
Spirit doesn't work that way very often. I started feeling this despair, and then I realized that doesn't do me any good, you know, the despair. And so I just sit with the burn, that's all I can call it. And I think there's something cleansing in the unrequited yearning that was going on in me.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
You know, I'm seeking, I'm reaching, I can like my inner arms are seeking to be somewhere, and I can't quite get there. And so the easy thing is to say, well, because I have all of these personality errors, you know,
mm-hmm.
this is the human sins,
mm-hmm.
but that's not it at all. I'm just separate from the Godhead in my life, is seeking that. And maybe it's just okay, you know? Maybe it's just okay to be in that yearning space, too.
Get Margaret the phone.
What you were talking about was reminiscent of the crucible and the alchemical fire.
Mm.
And that's required for part of the process. And so, you know, being okay with that and being attentive to it seems like a strategy, maybe an effective one.
I don't know how these things come about. I mean, I didn't say, well, I think I'll feel that now.
Well,
I didn't start thinking, well, I think I'll feel that yearning.
It's strange. So the practice would be like, yeah, but I could get up in the morning and be sure to have 15 minutes of yearning before I start the day.
Right. I did not do that.
That's what, you know, I was thinking that.
It descended on me.
Okay.
It descended on me in a certain way that I couldn't escape it.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, that's interesting what Marvette brought up there. I'm not sure I get the entire reference, but I'm thinking that we don't have practices very much that deal with this yearning, with yearning or with the separation directly head on, but maybe I'm wrong about that. I'm thinking that the Sufi...
And the hidden work.
And the hidden work. She's bringing up the lines in the prayer absolute.
I was referring to the hidden work, and yet it would be good to review the prayer, because there's a specific line about in motion bowing, with yearning, my presence wishes to serve thee, or
mm-hmm.
something like that. But
comes
each line,
the
doing of that prayer,
okay.
One is to be intentionally voluntarizing each line. And so in that line, you are voluntarizing the strong feeling of emotion of yearning, which is a really all-encompassing emotion. And we do have a practice
we do. Working with yearning.
So this is from the hidden work, which we did a couple of years ago now.
Oh, really? Wow.
Gosh. And this is actually, I think it is a chapter 18, Dan? 11.
Isn't that the book we did the angel presentation?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
This is chapter 11. It's page 113. And this is the prayer absolute, which is a critical part of this book called The Hidden Work. Now I'm going to go ahead and read it, okay? And here it goes. And notice, in motion bowing, my presence comes to thee. Humbly, with heart alive, my presence awakens to thee. With clear mind, my presence comes to know thee. With pity for thy suffering, my presence becomes aware of thee. With yearning, my presence wishes to comfort thee. In ignorance, my presence serves thee. In contemplation, my presence recognizes how to serve thee. In mystery, my presence is a comfort to thee. In form and formlessness, my presence becomes thee. We did that every morning for a while there. I guess Rocky's still doing it in the ashram, but this is something. So with yearning, my presence wishes to comfort me. Molly.
I don't
You want the phone?
Phone.
Do I just speak into it like that?
Yeah.
Okay. When I was younger, like maybe in my teens and 20s, never after that, I would go to psychotherapy sometimes. And I would meet a new psychotherapist or whatever. And that would be the greatest prayer to present to them. Because actually the very last line is a challenge that they have to work with as a therapist, because as they're trying to, you know, sort out the heaps of problems of people. But all of it is so real until that last one is a challenge. That must be for more different.
But each line is a different attribute. So in this one, we're talking about yearning. With yearning, and then it goes, my presence wishes to comfort thee.
It's on both sides of the couch, too.
Right.
That's for sure.
So what we have, you can give the phone back.
Yeah. Here it is.
Go ahead.
It's a fine prayer. I like
maybe there, if there are comments, we have comments online as well, Dan.
No. So anyway, I was so struck this time with that the attribute of God, I kept thinking that it's way up there. It's like this something we can never touch, you know, this God,
mm-hmm.
Alpha God. I can never ever touch that. But for me, it's something that can happen every day and we have an opportunity to avail ourselves of awakening the machine,
mm-hmm.
and the veil is lifted at that moment. So, awaken the machine. How do we awaken the machine? Well, Kay told us exactly how to do it. The lowest level of the simplicity of doing it is I move slowly and paid attention to my movements. Is that about right?
Yes, that's true. That's what actually opened. I was forced to do it because of my condition after the operation. But that's exactly right. That, you know, that was the exercise that we're given, you know. And it did.
Mysterious, esoteric knowledge that's out there is made directly possible to us by lifting the veil called awakening the machine. And then, as it says in the last part of that paragraph, it says that we are, it's the sustenance, right?
Mm-hmm. Sustenance for the spiritual consciousness.
The veil is thrown from your eyes, but the veil is in the heart.
Yeah, it does say the veil.
Grocki says, only a hair's breadth away.
It's only a hair's breadth away, and as I'm reading through this guidebook and I'm familiarizing myself with the 99 attributes of God, it's like I feel like they're sitting there waiting to help, and there's all these attributes, and they're going, let me help, let me help, let me help, come over here, and we just don't see them, and every once in a while something happens and we're able to. But I'm a very appreciative of E.J. Goal putting together this material for us, because we have specific ways and means to awaken the machine and begin to penetrate the veil. It's so cool.
Yeah, this is also, actually, you're bringing an interesting perspective to this, which is to say that when I experience that moment of opening, of seeing, having an expanded awareness or seeing an expanded reality, it's, okay, I'm not used to thinking of that as the presence or the action of a guide at all, but this is like grace. I mean, this is like the gift.
There it is.
Of the universe. It's a gift of this face of the universe, this aspect, which is Alpha Ta, which is the opener, the gate opener guide, or the lifter of the veil guide, or, you know, whatever, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm also reminded, for some reason, periodically I seem to remember certain Hebrew prayers, probably from my childhood, and this is the,
excellent.
You know, I'm thinking that when in the synagogue, when as part of the the Jewish liturgy, the people sing in the synagogue, the Kadosh, 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 Adonai Tzavaos, Melocho Horetz Kavodo, which means holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts. The whole earth is filled with his glory. It's like a way of saying all of this other, all the superficial, you know, all the misinterpretations or the smaller versions of whatever is going on, we're sweeping away. We're having this affirmation, in this case, together as a group of people,
yeah,
saying this is what the whole world is. It's actually the manifestation of this countenance, of this face of God.
Khalil Kibran. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that recently, EJ has been really talking about slowing down the last few weeks and trying to find ways to get people to slow down.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's true. If you just walk around now, I mean, when I walk around at the community, you know, at the junior college, let's say, just about any school campus, well, you see that everybody is on their smartphones all the time, and they're basically like, the thing about like ships passing in the night, yeah, they're passing one another. They're not even looking at the people that they're in the same room with, that they're passing on the path, that they're sitting in the cafeteria with, that they're sitting in class with. I mean, you know, you have to induce students now to talk to one another. It's not very easy.
Go ahead.
Gopal says, feelings of discomfort are times when we can realize that millions are feeling this way. It is a time that we can connect with others, feel compassion for ourselves, and at the same time others. And he follows up, thank you. Slow down is such a great mantra for this. Pema Chodron talking a lot about this these days.
Wow. That's pretty good.
I was going to say that when I was in my early, early 20s and I was reading Khalil Kibran, I should look it up again, but
right.
It was something, he says, when you come, don't seek your friends in order to kill time together. Seek your friends to live the highest form of life together.
I like that. That's a good mantra.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, I like that.
And my friends are enormous reminding factors. Every individual that's here, and I'm thinking that if I'm walking down the road in Grass Valley and I bump into Kay, immediately I'm in that other space. Immediately I'm lifted up, because it's like a holy reminding factor that occurs. It occurs because I see an essential friend.
I wanted to second that reminding factor. And I see it in the ashram. Particularly, there's avatars in the ashram that are just pillars of certain spaces. And we have this luxury of coming in and out of those spaces, and you walk in and you see one of the pillars, like Laura 34 or Rocky, and you just have such gratitude for them holding that space.
That's the space. I was just thinking about going into the reading cycle that Rocky and Nortiana put on, and the excellence of behavior that they have of managing the space with great discipline and beauty. It's really nice, those two.
Well, their artwork.
Yeah, but I'm not talking about the artwork. I'm talking about the construction of the space and the holding of it, and that is very strong, these individuals. So when we go about our day, remember, there are friends about, and we can seek them out. just touching ever so gently, either in the ashram or in a space like this, we have one more little penny in the essence bank. You know, Ivan, we got through most of this hour. We haven't even talked about the second part of the voice space.
Yeah, what happened to this very short book?
It is short. It's one page.
Should we read the rest of it or talk about it next week? Maybe we should let it go for next week.
What do you think?
I think we should continue reading.
Okay. It's important to read this.
I feel that
tonight.
I wouldn't be complete.
Oh, okay.
So
Marvette's expressing yearning.
To go ahead for next week on this. So this will finish. Should you just read it, are you suggesting, or penetrate it a little bit next week? Okay, let's just go ahead and we'll read it together, Ivan.
Sure.
So this is the rest of book.
Read it alternate?
Yeah.
Okay.
And
you take four.
Okay, I'll begin then with this part. So this is the 14th book of the dead called the Book of Ulfata, verse 4. These are the instructions for the 11th day of apparitions caused by breaking apart of the primal forms of consciousness on the first day of death.
5. If through the power of evil tendencies and error, and through the power of violent habits and aggressions, you have sought refuge from the guides who have appeared to you for your liberation, then on this day the violent guides of the Order of the Rose shall appear to you within your guide who is now before you.
6. And he who becomes afraid of this apparition shall be cast down, but he who recognizes them and knows them to be projections of the forms of the five elements of consciousness, and knows them as part of his own beingness, shall have no fear about them, and he shall not be cast down into the world.
7. And they are in reality formless and void elements of pure spirit. And he who believes in their reality, he shall be afraid. But as recognition dawns on you, liberation shall also come to you.
And 8. And through acknowledgement, recognition shall come to you, and you shall attain the kingdom of the Spirit. Thus concludes Book 14 of the Book of the Dead called the Book of Ulfata. Yeah, good. Thank you. I'm glad that we read that.
I think further penetration could be on the word recognition.
Okay.
What is it really for recognition?
Let's go ahead and do that then. We'll take up part two of this. And the reason is the point what Marvette is pointing out, and Ivan and I have been kind of wondering about too, there's a similarity to the Voyager part of these verses.
Mm-hmm.
And this concept of recognition as a solution is very important. So we'll expand that a bit coming in the next week. So we're going to do chapter 14 for 2 weeks. And that would be the first in a little while, since it's been more than 1 week on a book. And I appreciate the suggestion, okay? So anyway, thank you for coming tonight. It was very vibrant for many of us. And thank you so much, Kay, as well, for helping out, okay?
Oh, thank you. My pleasure and blessings.
Okay. And good night.
Good night.